support to help us achieve this mission. By donating today, you'll help us to continue providing access to training and equipment for over 300 volunteers who produce 140 hours of original programming in over 10 languages. Since 1975, we've celebrated the rich cultural diversity of the Greater Vancouver area through our arts, music and spoken word programming. Please support alternative community-based radio. You can donate today by visiting coopradio.org or calling 604-684-8494. That's 604-684-8494.
On Saturday, October 19th at 9 p.m., join Damaged Goods for the Co-op Radio Fundraiser Volume 1 at The Emerald, located at 555 Gore Avenue. Enjoy a night of indie dance music that is handled with care, featuring a headlining set from Homebreakin' Records boss Neighbor, with support from Damaged Goods residents Meniski, Sladium M, and a special live set from Vesuvius. Saturday, October 19th from 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. Join Damaged Goods for the Co-op Radio Fundraiser at 555 Gore Avenue.
Is this mic turned on?
Wax poetic.
Who amongst us carries the sage secrets of loving?
Just say no to family values.
Wax poetic.
I'm a man-made body of water lapping on an old indie track and a casino. I don't make promises.
Nerds have better sex.
I want to ride. I want to ride an asteroid.
You're listening to Wax Poetic on Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. Broadcasting live from the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations.
In the distance still, Ophidian freight trains wail, grinding their way along long tracks paved with the skulls of dead magi.
And leave this room with the words I engraved in you. Dreams come true.
And here we are once again. Good afternoon. Welcome to Wax Poetic on Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. I'm one of your hosts today, R.C. Weslowski.
And I'm your other host, Lucia Mish.
And happy to have in studio today with a brand new book.
Yay.
Fiona Tinway Lam. Hi, Fiona.
Hi. So happy to be here today.
So glad to have you. So let's get something right out from the new book to start things off.
Sure. I'm going to read the first poem, which is a kind of invocation. It's based on this wonderful, complex heritage apple juice from Denman Island that I really, really love. And my friend said, you know, you're doing these odes to ordinary things. Why don't you write an ode to your favorite apple juice? I said, okay, why not? And so this is it. Libation. For me, no wine. Just the life's blood of apples mashed whole in a democracy of pulp. Skin, core, seeds, flesh, warty or warped, bruised or scabbed, joined to make juice as round and real as earth. Let's open our tongues to bitter soil, sweet scorch of sun, crisp of autumn leaves, shimmer of river. Forget those tortured espaliered trees, slaves chained to their stakes, forced to sing their single notes. Give us the old orchard's choir of venerable trees, gnarled arms held high and wide as tapers, knobbed with a decade's dripping wax. Quaff the murky golden madrigals of juice and know, all revealed in a moment's swallow. For what is juice but poetry?
Huh.
What we've lived and known wrung out of roots, trunk, guts, limbs, into the radiant fruit of now, seasoned by wind and night. What's held within this cup, this poem, this juice, I offer you.
Thank you.
That's a nice start.
Yeah.
Nice start for the book, too, I guess. That makes sense.
I think so, yeah. Like a toast.
Yeah. I like
go ahead.
I just like the idea of, like, when, as soon as you compared it to poetry and the idea of, like, all the roots and the limbs and the bark, everything together creating that juice too. It really struck me.
I also really loved the evocation of the fact that you don't need a beautiful apple to make beautiful apple juice, and in fact it's the bruises and scabs. And I just made applesauce for the first time this season, I guess, out of a dollar bag of apples that nobody wanted.
Right.
And goddamn, is it good.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So everything is very democratic.
Well, yeah, I couldn't never, well, and you were talking about the orchards, and it just reminded me, I grew up on a farm and we had like apple trees and stuff like that.
Fantastic.
And it would be the ones that were all on the ground and had dropped off are the ones you'd pick up and make for applesauce or for juice or whatever.
Yeah. So they're still useful and they're delicious and valuable. Yeah.
And what a lovely metaphor for how we turn our lives into poems.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Well done. It's like you've done this before.
So this book is full of, it's Odes and Laments. Is the title of the book and the content of the book, it sounds like, too. It's odes to everyday objects.
That's right. It's inspired by Pablo Neruda. Neruda wrote his Ode to Common Things, or Odas Elementales, and I always loved those poems, the odes to socks, odes to oranges, French fries, you name it. And so I was inspired by his approach. However, with odes, they're very celebratory, but I wanted to include some laments about our environmental crisis. So there's a lot of laments about the state of nature and human incursions on the natural world as well. But especially with climate change these days, it's impossible not to write about it.
Yeah, it really sort of infuses daily life and in the way that everyday objects do too, right?
Sure. Well, with the odes, it's like celebrating something that we might lose. We might lose those trees to fires, to drought, whatever. Yeah.
I was curious whether you had, are there more odes or laments in the book? Or?
Oh, there are many odes and many laments. I'll read an example of a very simple ode that I wrote. It's simple and short. I was thinking back to when I first was introduced to poetry, and that was to nursery rhymes when I was a kid. And my mom was a real fan of Robbie Burns as well, and she would sing his songs. She could recite his poetry in Cantonese at Robbie Burns Day, that kind of thing. So rhythm and rhyme are important to me. I don't use necessarily those structures of sonnets or whatever, but I like to use those sonic effects, very much like how spoken word poets too, although in the lyric mode, a lot shorter. Here's a poem about pockets. Dear holder and hider of hands, let my fingers hibernate. You carry the sum of my life, proof I am who I am, entry to rooms or countries in your secret stashes, tickets, phones, pens, passes, matches, linty mints, sweets in crinkly jackets, fingertips brush your caches. Replete, I pat you, panicked, a repeated rummage, as if you stored magic to make the lost reappear.
Oh, that is so, the sonics of that are so intricate. That's lovely.
Yes, I mean, you don't need to have, A-B rhymes.
Totally. Yeah, iambic pentameter.
Yeah.
So we can't bring up pockets without touching upon the gendered inequality between, quote-unquote, men's pants and women's pants and the pockets therein.
Yes.
Thoughts?
Yes. Yes, I absolutely agree. I always hunt out for those things with pockets because I need them, especially in a day like today when it's so crisp, your fingers really,
Le culotte, when I was a kid, they were the jean that came out in the big deal was that they didn't have pockets.
Oh.
And that was like the cool thing. You know, they had the little
faux pockets, stitching.
But you couldn't put your hands in them. And I never wore them, but I don't know if they were aimed more at young women or young men. I don't know if you recall the La Culotte.
Yeah, you still encounter those fake out pockets on at least jeans for women, which is mostly what I buy. And every so often, you try something on real fast in the thrift store and forget to check whether you can actually put your hands in there. But I love the idea too of pockets as secret holders, and these little like wells of identity. So often when I'm doing laundry, I'm like, ah, yes. this thing and this receipt and this place I was and this strange thing I picked up off the ground and decided to carry with me.
And the joy of maybe finding, for me anyways, like, oh, I found a toonie in my pocket.
Yes.
I got an extra toonie
now. That's right. The hidden treasures.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe the pocket is hiding it until you really need that toonie.
I think so. Yeah. Especially if it's something that, because I never feel like I lose anything, but I certainly misplace things a lot. And oftentimes pockets in pants and jackets, especially I'll put a jacket I haven't worn for, you know, 5 months or whatever. Then I put my hand, oh my gosh, there's $5. Oh, there's two or whatever. You know, like you said, or receipts of bars you were at. And you go, oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, exactly.
What did you like about pockets that made you want to write an ode to that?
Well, I dearly love them. Mm-hmm. And when I have a jacket, I just find that's where my hands are. And they're so comforting, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then when you lose something, when I've been traveling, it's like you're always hunting in that same pocket looking for the thing that isn't there, as if it's going to reappear. Mm-hmm. And I thought, yeah, that's exactly the magic of pockets.
So in writing this book that's this collection of odes and laments for everyday objects, did your attention to the everyday change knowing that you were doing this project?
Oh, yes. So there's one about oranges, there's one about peaches, potatoes, rice. Yes, it meant going back to the orange, the peach, whatever it was, and like drinking the apple juice when I was writing the apple juice poem, and really paying attention to the senses.
Mm.
And that attentiveness is important in poetry. Mary Oliver says, attention is the beginning of devotion.
Mm.
And of course, you do appreciate it when you're sitting there for an hour staring and sniffing and touching and caressing something. You know, you do appreciate it more, for sure.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Did you find that you knew what you wanted to write about and then went back and tried to experience those objects with sort of poetic attention, or that more often you'd be going through your day and be like, ooh, this thing resonates, this orange tastes awfully good, maybe this should be one of the objects to which I write?
Went in every direction. Sometimes there'd be an image of something, and I think, oh, I want to pay attention to that. So there is a picture of Mary Pratt's lemons, and I thought, oh, I got to write about that. So I stared at that for actually more than a few hours. It's like days going back to visit it. But there were times, too, when I would think, okay, I want to write about various domestic objects. And so I would lay things out, and I would look at them and try to do some riffs. And then something would be triggered in a positive way about a particular thing. And I'd love to read this one about chopsticks.
Oh, please do.
I was trying to write about, you know, the fork and the knife and that kind of thing, but the fork and knife weren't just doing it for me. The chopsticks did. It just opened up this memory. It's interesting how ordinary objects are like portals that take you back. Chopsticks. Grandfather sets down the bowl full of marbles. I pick up the chopsticks and hover, then picture my hand as a heron with a long, long beak plunging down to pluck each orb, lift it through air and held breath in a tremulous trip toward the saucer. 5,000 years of evolution in hand, branches honed to stir ancient cauldrons, become sleek batons of ivory, gold, or jade adorning an aristocrat's table. With their deft dance and dip, more adroit than a fork, twin acrobats poised to hoist choice morsels. Let your elders lead, he tells me. Never point your chopsticks at a guest. Never spear your food like a fisherman. Don't tap the side of your bowl like a beggar. Keep them by the plate when you rest or across the bowl at meal's end, but never upright like incense burning in an urn for the dead. While he watches, stiff bamboo grows nimble. One by one, each small glassy planet arcs up, then lands with a clink. The bowl gleams empty. Grandfather nods.
I love that. That's so great. I love the sound of the twin acrobats poised to hoist choice morsels.
Yeah.
That sounds so beautiful. And the way you're reading it, it's really great, too. And the etiquette now, like, I didn't know any of that etiquette around chopsticks, and that's pretty important.
It's very educative, yeah.
And the image too of picking marbles out of a jar.
That was so hard.
Yeah, that sounds terribly difficult.
Yeah. That was my grandfather always raising the bar.
And was that as a way to learn to use them? Was that
Yes. Have a nice tight grip on those marbles and being very, very careful and, again, attentive to do that. And, of course, there was an incentive at the end. So he did that to his kids, my dad and his brother, and also to us and to my cousins. So I don't know where he must have had to go through this himself.
That's so sweet.
It's really, I find it really moving to think about, because I'm thinking now about sort of looking around in my mind's eye at my own home and all of the things sort of, you know, quotidian and you know, less, more decorative or unique. And what a relationship I have with all of them. And I've definitely, you know, more than once in my life been accused of being a pack rat and also very sentimental,
sure.
Both of which are really fair critiques. They're true. But it's really, it's just really wonderful to, I feel very validated by your poetry at this moment, I think, is where I'm going with this.
And sure, everything has a story.
Yeah, absolutely. And so often and that attentiveness that we're talking about, which is such a core ingredient to writing, is also sort of a core ingredient to feeling, meaningful connections with the things in our space, things as simple as forks and chopsticks and oranges.
Sure. Yeah. Our favorite cup.
Favorite mugs are a big thing. Yeah, for
anything.
Sure.
Favorite sweater, favorite shoes, whatever. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are there any objects in the book that are lost objects or broken objects? Things you no longer have around you?
Well, I've certainly broken my share of plates and everything else. I do have things like, I'll give you an idea of things that were ordinary objects. I wrote about stop signs and pencils, the letter Z. I also wrote about Canuck the Crow, rice. What else is there? I did a series of concrete visual poems, which I can't... Well, some of them are kind of readable and others not, about plastic pollution. I was looking at all the plastic around and, you know, not only the recycling boxes lying on the ground and think, you know, how can I write a poem about this? It's not going to be kind of a rant that turns people off, because people already know about plastic pollution. They see the articles, they maybe don't even read them, turn off the computer, turn off the television set. How can I reach people and connect to people about plastic pollution in a way that's going to work? And I decided to do it with concrete plastic, what I call plastic poems. And they show the words in the shape of a cup, a straw, microplastic in the ocean, as a plate. And I'll read you this particular one. It's a bit easier to read. The other ones, they're spiraling and so forth, which would require me to sort of turn the book upside down and around. It's called Plasticnik. It tells you something right
Every
away.
Every summer we go on a Plasticnik.
Yeah. And it's shaped like a circle. There's a circle around it, just to symbolize those wonderful plastic plates that we see in the summertime. Open plastic hampers. Pop open plastic lids of plastic clamshells, a convenient feast huddled within. Sit on plastic chairs around plastic tables draped with plastic. Use plastic spoons to heap food on plastic plates. Devour it with plastic forks and knives. Pour soda from plastic bottles into plastic cups and suck it up with plastic straws while the baby suckles on a plastic soother. Later, wrap all leftovers in new plastic or scrape them into old plastic. Carry it all home in plastic. Then take plastic out of plastic to put on plastic shelves in the plastic body of the fridge.
It's everywhere.
It really is.
Yes.
I love plastic is repeated so many times, and as will happen when you do that with a word, it kind of loses its meaning and connotation becomes this kind of odd arrangement of sounds.
Yes.
Yeah, which obviously is intentional, like the over and over and over.
Right. It's supposed to drive you crazy, but it's absolutely, the repetition is because it is everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I actually turned that into an animated video poem that has toured so many places. Houston, Seattle, it's also shown in Ireland and Athens. So the message seems to be getting out there, which is kind of fun.
What was the process of taking it from the page to a video poem?
Well, first I did a recording of it, and then I had some images in my mind of fridge magnets, for example. I wanted all the credits done in fridge magnets because they're plastic. Kids play with them, and then what happens to them when they break or are lost or lose their magnet? They get thrown out, and they're not recyclable. So I thought that would be kind of fun with those primary colors, and I thought to use those primary colors in the video poem itself with a mandala of circling garbage that accumulates around the circle of forks and plates and clamshells and so forth, with them moving around the circle. And then, since there wasn't a whole lot of room inside the plate circle thing for the whole poem, which would have been boring just to print out, we had the word plastic in different fonts in the primary colors appear every time I said the word plastic. So you'd see the word plastic and, you know, different Comic Sans or Times New Roman, whatever, in a different color. And it would be eye-catching because the font and color changes and reflect the rhythm of the poem. And by the end of it, with the credits, there are photographs of ocean pollution. You know, the turtles swimming with a plastic bag and piles of plastic on the shore, that kind of thing.
Where is the video headed next, or can folks find it online?
They can find it online on my website. I've about 5 video poems there with links. It's going to be in Athens in December, and it's also going to be in Ireland in November. If anyone's in Ireland right now, we're going to be in Ireland, in Cork. It's going to be part of a special demonstration, but I can't talk about it until it's launched on November 1st.
Ooh, so, a little teaser there.
Yes, a little teaser there. Yeah.
Right on.
How about, I mean, I don't know if that was a lament or not, but it'd be interesting to hear a lament or two.
Sure.
Just for anybody just joining in, you're listening to Wax Poetic on Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. Our guest this afternoon is Fiona Tinway Lamb.
There's 2 laments I'd like to read. One is part of a sequence called Spectrum about my partner's diagnosis and surgery for colorectal cancer, of all things to write about. And the poem is divided into the color spectrum, so each subtitle is a color. And I'm going to read you Blue. Hope nobody's too squeamish here. And it plays off of the origins of the word, the etymology for the word guts, which is derived from the old English gutus for bowels or entrails.
Gutus.
Gutus. Blue. Gut surgery. The diagram for resection. Plumbing repair crossed with tailoring. Shaved, swabbed, intubated for visceral realignment. Gut instincts. Spill one's guts, bust a gut. 4 hours later, neat lines of staples, plastic tubes to plastic sacks, one tube connecting to a blue PCA that ticks and clucks as if tiny robot chickens inside titrate hydromorphone day and night. Right in the gut, takes gut, gutsy. Excisions hidden, rejigged, will the body miss? It's missing pieces. Gut reaction. Gut wrenching. Gutted. So that was a play on some of the colloquial terms that we use about guts, and we really understood guts after that experience. I had to include one kind of rant about the state of the world. Most of the poems aren't rants. They are laments. but the anger is channeled. But this one was more an out-and-out rant. And it's a response to Adam Zagajewski's poem, Try to Praise the Mutilated World. His poem uses that Try to Praise the Mutilated World as a kind of refrain throughout the poem, and it was written and read around 9/11 about praising the world. And I was feeling really angry about how everything seemed to be going down the toilet. And so mine is an anti-litany. I've tried to praise those patches, shards, and strands of nature assembled into a dilute semblance of wilderness. But all around, waves froth and foam, slick with jettisoned fuel from busted freighters, slathering all in a slime of liquid night. Every day another discarded ton of plastic chokes and strangles. I cannot praise our mutilated world. Swaths of death scraped across the ocean floor, poisoned lakes, amputated forests, skies thick from swarming drones and a billion corporate exhalations, migrants beached like discarded dolls. What's left to praise lies on the other side of barbed wire, those fragile, fading calls of greenness, blueness, before they're trampled. Beauty we remember, but might never resuscitate.
Yep. Yeah, that's that really strikes a chord, I think, for me, probably for a lot of people. It's hard to write a optimistic poem these days about the state of the world. And it's interesting thinking about that piece in the context of so many little sort of moments of gratitude and affection yes. in the rest of the book.
Right.
And I wonder, what was the experience of writing it like for you?
Well, the odes are really an attempt to reclaim something beautiful, even those small shards, in face of incredible, incredible despair. Sometimes you feel like there's no way we can turn things back, but we, in the end, we have to. We have to remember that there's beauty. We have to remember that we can reclaim things. And there have been success stories, small success stories in the face of the monumental. And we just have to remember that the news, of course, is looking at a lot of the crises and trying to spur people to action. So in our own lives, we can't despair. We can't give up. We have to keep trying. There's a last poem in the book that I write that is about something that's been submerged, where there has been despair and loss, but there is resuscitation at the end. And it's a poem I dedicated to Rita Wong, a local poet who was incarcerated. Mm-hmm. She was sentenced to 4 weeks, 28 days, for protesting peacefully about the pipeline. It was incredible to me. It's people who do break and enters and assaults who don't get 4 weeks mm-hmm. in prison. And I dedicate it to her because she did a lot of work over the past decade to daylight these lost streams. And I've gone to look at these streams at Renfrew Ravine and other places, and they're quite magical. Lost stream. Forgotten one, you remember what you were. Mossy banks, fringes of fern, rivulets, riffles, cool passage for salmon. On a map of old streams spilling out to the strait, you are one of hundreds of capillaries threading through earth, muscled with rock, lavished with forest. Then the city donned concrete masks, civilized grids. Smothered into park, you were culverted, diverted, yoked, locked into pipes while we romped above. But you refused to be choked under clear-cut, brush-cut tracks. Playing fields soak back into marsh. Bog rises through playground. One by one, oaks topple in sodden soil, upended roots like tangled claws. Submerged roads around you ripple in wind. Water above seeks water below. Deep underground, you gurgle, chortle, ready to rise.
And take it back about the optimistic poems.
Yes.
No, that's then that's the last poem in the book.
Yes, it is. And it's about how, not only about those streams that are lost that can be returned, but about how things in ourselves that we've put aside and submerged and repressed, that creativity, that life force is still there and it can rise again.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add to that.
You summed it up most eloquently.
Yeah, I think that's a sort of beautiful call to action, internal and external.
Thank you
for
being our guest today.
Thank you.
We are pretty much out of time. So the book, again, name, publisher, where people can get it.
Sure. The launch for the book, Odes and Laments by Caitlin Press. It can be purchased at Pulp Fiction in Kitsilano. And also, if you come to the launch, it's at on October 17th. Thursday night at 7 p.m. at Cafe Locale at 4th and Trafalgar. And I'll also be reading in March for Poets Corner.
Oh,
fantastic.
Great.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. And if people want to get in touch with you or find more of your work online, you mentioned you have a website.
Sure. It's fionalam.net.
Awesome. And check out those videos. Those video poems.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing them.
A couple of events happening, poetry events that are happening. On Monday, Frances Arevalo is featuring at the Vancouver Poetry Slam. That's at Café de Soleil. That is this coming Monday. On Tuesday, October 29th at Massey Books, a brand new book co-edited by Amber Dawn. The Whore's Manifesto will be having the Vancouver book launch at Massey Books on Tuesday, October 29th at 7 p.m. And, of course, there's lots of other stuff online that you can check out. Local poetry events happening, Pandora's Collective, The Poet's Corner, and tons of stuff at Massey Books as well. Our guest today has been Fiona Tinway Lamb. The new book is Odes and Laments on Caitlin Press. Thanks so much for sharing work from it today.
Thanks so much, guys.
Glad to have you. That's it for us. We are back next week. And until then, I'm R.C. Wislowski.
I'm Lucia Mish.
And No Apologies Necessary is coming up next. Should have done that already.
You've been listening to Wax Poetic on Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM, broadcasting live from the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. Join us again next week for more poetry from around the world.
Dreams come true! We'll be right back.
Sorry.
It's okay, don't worry about it.
Hold on, I'm
It's okay.
I'm sorry.
Don't be sorry. Are you sorry?
I'm sorry.
I'm not sorry. He's not sorry. We're not sorry. So don't be sorry.
Sorry.
I'm not sorry. I'm not sorry. I'm not sorry.
I'm sorry. Sorry. I'm sorry. Sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Good afternoon, Vancouver. You're tuned into Co-op Radio 100.5 FM, CFRO. This is the No Apologies Necessary Show. My name is Kenan Ziegler-Sunger, here with you every single Wednesday, playing the best in local and Canadian music. Very happy to be here with you on this lovely Wednesday afternoon. Nice, brisk, sunny day. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on right now, but particularly an issue of big import right now is the federal election going on. Anything said on the show is the expressed opinions of myself and this program do not necessarily reflect the views of the station. However, I'm going to let most of the music do the talking and maybe play a few fun clips, talk a little jive, get into a bit of trouble, and just, you know, keep it locked. We're going to be starting off with some good local music here. But yeah, No Apology Necessary broadcast out of the heart of the downtown east side from Co-op Radio Studios at the corner of Hastings and Columbia. We also, our broadcast is towers on the top of Mount Seymour and broadcast across the unceded Coast Salish territory of the Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, and Squamish Nations. Very happy to be here, guests on this land, and we're going to play a bunch of good music that hopefully honors the space that we're in and talks a bit about the environment and protecting that stuff today on the show. I feel like that's a big issue going on with Extinction Rebellion blocking bridges and the biggest protest in Vancouver history about 2 weeks ago now, the climate protest march. And we're just kind of keeping that energy going and going to play a few clips of this and that and make some jokes and have some fun. If that sounds like something you're into, stick around. And if you like what you hear, you can check out more at WWW Co-op Radio and learn how to support completely independent, community-owned, community-operated radio. Thanks a lot for listening. We're going to start out with a tune from the Honey Tongues, recorded live at the Wise Hall in East Vancouver. This tune's called The People's Medicine, and they're a great local band based out of here in the island, I guess, sort of members of Dirty Grace and Red Haven, who I've also both separately played on the radio a bunch of times. This show actually was mixed by Red Haven's bass player, Nathan, I believe, and was recorded, like I said, at the Wise while I was helping mix some of the sound as a sound engineer at the show. So it's a fun experience for me to get to listen to it again and share it with all you on the air. Keep it locked, and thanks for tuning in. Listen to Co-op Radio. No apology necessary. Peace.
My body's tragedy and losing all that we create. I see a world turning.
I see them souls burning.
Flashed me down outside Kingston. The officer said, son, I'm just like you. Try to ease up and pass on through. I'm shifty in the customs line. My suitcase is full of shitty Dutch wine. She hears the bottles rattle and clink. Waves me right through with no even wink. My shop cart won't fit anymore. Thoughtlessly, I walk right through the door. The clerk said, you don't look like a thief. I will let it slide, you can pay me next week. Oh, someone fixed the game for me. Someone fixed the game for me. I'm not on top, but I can see that somebody fixed it for me. I'm sick and scared of living downtown with the disenfranchised, volatile crowd. The bank man said he would sell us a loan for a no-money-down suburban home. What could go wrong when the cop, the nurse, the fire brigade? I break down, they all run to my aid. It don't matter just how deep I get stuck. Someone arrives to dig me up. Someone fixed the game. Someone fixed the game for me. I scrambled high enough to see that somebody fixed it for me. When other blokes get tossed in the clink, I sneak by to frolic and drink. Some say it's 'cause I'm clean. privileged and white. So if you're the less fortunate, then man up and oppress somebody else. Then in a generation or two, someone will fix the game for you. Like someone fixed the game for me. I got a pair of knives and I'm hitless as three. I'm no card shark, but the dealer knows me. Somebody fixed it, I see. But a storm has come. Is a flood rushing in. It's up to my neck and it's through to my skin. Keep your head down. Everything's fine. Don't worry about yours. I got what's mine. You see the auctioneer? He's manning the raft. He's calling out the oars and the mast. If I can bid the other guy down, I will sail home. The rest can drown. Someone fix the game for me. Someone fix the game for me. That's unsure hot, but I'll sail free. Somebody fix this for me. Yeah, someone fix the game for me. Someone fix the game for me. Not a drop to drink, no land to sink in. Somebody fix this for me. Can somebody fix this for me? Can somebody fix this for me?
Thank you. For the fruit, then finish off the dots.
Good afternoon. We're back here on Co-op Radio. No apologies necessary. Just a little directional help for all you people driving around in cars right now listening to the radio. Don't listen to me. This is called No Apologies Necessary. We're just doing our thing. Don't go left, right, and up and down in your car. Well, unless you got hydraulics, that's kind of funky. But, you know, probably not a great plan, you know, to reverse really quickly or something over the bike lane and into a storefront or something. Just thoughts like that. Apparently something like that happened yesterday morning downtown. Somebody trying to parallel park and flew into the storefront of down on Howe Street or something. Sounded a little hectic. So, you know, don't listen to us when it comes to directions. I can't see your car. We're just here having fun, playing good music. And to that effect, we just heard a bit of Roland Kirk Quintet, just a little clip of a tune called Volunteer Slavery. Some friends of mine are putting on a show I'll be participating in over at Café du Soleil on October 20th, a tribute to the late, great jazz musician Rahsaan Roland Kirk. Great musician who played three saxophones at once, multiple flutes, hung out with Coltrane and played with him, and played in Mingus's big band, and just a phenomenal musician all around. A lot of people don't know about him, and so I thought it'd be great to play a little something from him. Earlier in that set, we also heard from the Honey Tongues with The People's Medicine, and we heard from Wax Mannequin with Someone's Fixed the Game for Me. Wax Mannequin is actually playing October 30th. With my good friend Christy Rhodes and somebody else I was unfamiliar with, but looked pretty awesome when I looked him up over at the Wise Hall Lounge. So definitely go check out Wax Mannequin from Hamilton, Ontario. He's one of my favorite Canadian musicians and also just a rad human being. So go check out Wax Mannequin October 30th at the Wise Hall Lounge. Earlier in that set, too, we also heard from The Rebel Spell with a tune called The World Turned Upside Down, the amazing traditional song that was sort of rehashed by Billy Bragg, and then they did such a phenomenal version of it that it's great to share it whenever I can. And shout out to the Rebel Spell crew and all those folks. We're gonna keep it rolling with some good music here. I got some fun things queued up in the next set. I'm gonna start off with my friend Chelsea D.E. Johnson and a band called High Society that she plays in. She's currently on tour with Old Soul Rebel, but I don't have any good recordings of them on me today. You know, we're real professional here at No Apologies Necessary. But this is one of her phenomenal tunes, and I thought it'd be good to play her and shout her out. I hear they're somewhere in Northern Ontario on a cross Canada tour, getting ready to storm Parliament or something in Ottawa. I'm not sure where they're going or what they're doing, but maybe that's what they're doing, aside from playing shows. So shout out to Old Soul Rebel, who's on tour across Canada right now. If you are listening across the country, cooperadio.org, you know, go check them out. They're a phenomenal band and good folks. So it's a real treat to get to play that. We're also going to play something from Tribe Called Red, featuring Saul Williams, a tune called The Virus. And then we'll also be playing a bit of something that's a surprise. Maybe to you, maybe to me. We don't know. And then somewhere along the way, I'm going to get into a bit of a mashup on some election-related things because there was that debate And one comment I do have about the debate that certainly would be nonpartisan would be that it sort of seems to me like we're following the American election model, whereas politics are becoming increasingly about personal attacks and less about things actually happening and the issues that matter to people, matter to, you know, the people that are going to be voting. And so I really want to encourage people to get out there and participate in the politics. And, you know, if you participate and people are aware about the actual issues, we can steer clear of the American model, which is working famously well for them right now with the orange clown, although that's an insult to clowns, the orange mutant from the golden toilet or whatever we want to call him today. You know, so it's really important to get out there and get informed and focus on the actual issues and don't be fooled by all the fake hype and the whack little, you know, Facebook news and the super biased news sources. It's really important to find actual factual information. And when we bring stuff to you here on Co-op Radio, we hope that that's what we do, because facts are free. We got a whole little thing we're running right now about how facts are free. And a lot of these facts may not agree with one of the political parties there. I wonder which one. And I'm talking, of course, about the conservatives who, in Alberta, have set up a $30 million commission to make sure that people aren't spreading anti-oil sands propaganda or being partisan, because then they could lose their nonprofit license and all this sort of ridiculousness, trying to intimidate independent radio stations like Co-op Radio. I am not intimidated. We here at No Apologies Necessary ain't gonna apologize for anything we say, because we're keeping it real, playing the music for the people, by the people, and talking about the things actually going on. So we're gonna jump into some music. Without further ado, this is Feel So Blue by Chelsea Johnson and High Society. And then we're gonna get into some more trouble, because that's what we do. It's No Apologies Necessary. Keep it locked. Thanks for listening. CFRO 102.7.
Okay, well, let's do it. I'm gonna do it whatever way it comes out. We rolling? 1, 2, 3, 4. Hate this life.
found like cut-ups to counter the effect of a language becoming more and more abstract and meaningless. The cut-up is really much closer to the actual facts of perception. As soon as you look out the window, look around the room, walk down.